Well, let's talk to a man who served in John Major's cabinet in the 1990s, Sir Malcolm Rifkin. Sir Malcolm, very good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
Now, Ed Miliband has accused David Cameron of demeaning his office by talking up the SNP. That's effectively, I suppose, what you could say Sir John Major was doing today. Are the Conservatives not playing fast and loose with the union for short-term political gain?
No, I think one has to ask what is supposed to happen at a general election. We do two things at a general election. We obviously try to choose a government and members of parliament, but we also have to identify what are the big historic judgments that have to be made in the wider national interest. Now, coming to the heart of the issue you've just raised, the position of the Scottish Nationalists is a very unusual situation. Every opinion poll is suggesting that they're going to destroy the Labour Party in Scotland. 30 or 40 seats are going to be gained by them. That means that the Labour Party cannot form a government in the United Kingdom without nationalist support. Now, that nationalist support is not going to be given for a few minor concessions. The nationalists survive for one purpose. It is to try to drag Scotland out of the United Kingdom. The Scottish public rejected that last year. The nationalists know that they would lose a referendum, so they're trying to achieve the same result by salami tactics, by making a whole series of demands, they hope, from a Labour government that would hollow out the United Kingdom, and they would, by the back door, destroy the union. So that is an issue for a general election.
But do Westminster politicians, and particularly Conservative Party leaders, not need to be a little bit careful here with the language that they use? Because it is all undermining the union, isn't it?
No, well, everyone needs to be careful with the language. One must never exaggerate. One must never use emotional language unless it is entirely justified. But you cannot actually remove some element of emotion from something as fundamental as people's identity. You know, that we had this massive referendum in Scotland last year. The Scottish public decided by 10% margin they did not want to leave the United Kingdom. Now, most people thought that was the end of that particular proposal. The Nationalists have made it clear they have not given that up. That's the only thing they exist for. And therefore, you are going to see a situation where the Labour Party, having been massacred in its own stronghold of Scotland, if all the polls are right, nevertheless would look to the Nationalists to enable them to get into Downing Street.
Doesn't all of this rather undermine the position of the Scottish Tory leader, Ruth Davidson, who I think most people agree had a brilliant referendum campaign? She projects an image of the party very different to other Conservative leaders. And the message that's being sent out, effectively, is to people to vote Labour, isn't it? Scottish voters to vote Labour rather than Tory, where the SNP might win. That totally undermines
No,
her.
I know the point you're making, Ian, but I think it's not quite as straightforward as that. I think what people are saying, and I would certainly echo this, is that I do not want to see the Nationalists win any seats in Scotland, whether it happens to be Conservative, Labour, or Liberal Democrat. Because I think when you're dealing with Conservatives, Labour, and Liberal Democrat, you're dealing with people who, part of whose belief is to preserve the United Kingdom, which the Scottish public, by a majority, wish to preserve. The Nationalists are on their own.
But put yourself in the position of somebody who lives in Stirling, a former Conservative seat. Your colleague Michael Forsyth used to hold that seat. Somebody there who, at the moment, they've got a Labour MP. It's highly likely that that seat is going to go SNP at the election. What would you advise a Conservative voter to do in that seat, where voting Conservative, frankly, isn't going to achieve much at all?
I freely confess that's a very difficult judgment and a very difficult question to answer. I think what you are seeing happening... Let me say it. I mean, I'm going to try and answer your question. I think what we're seeing already in many parts of Scotland is the various unionist parties, which together are outnumber the nationalists, are saying in one or two areas, well, if we voted for the unionist candidate most likely to win, that might stop the nationalists. It is a dangerous tactic, because obviously you can't control these things in the detail you would like to, but I can understand that the strength of feeling is such that when the United Kingdom's very existence is at stake, people look to new remedies of preventing the nationalists who've already been defeated in the referendum by trying to achieve the same result by the back door.
And if you were in that seat, what would you personally do?
I don't know. I've thought about that very question. And obviously you start off saying, well, of course I would vote for the party I believe in. Sometimes you may have to at least think very hard. Is there an alternative approach which, in the unique circumstances that's going to be faced in May the 7th, Is there an argument for trying to stop the nationalists? People do vote tactically. I've done so on previous occasions.
So
the Tories lost heavily. I mean, we lost virtually all our seats in 1997, precisely because there was a lot of tactical voting. People were so determined to defeat us. So this is not an unknown phenomenon.
So your message might be encapsulated. Well, sometimes you have to be a unionist first and a Tory second.
Well, you have to make a judgment. What is the biggest issue you're being asked to decide? And if it's the normal issues of the economy, the social policy and so forth, or defence, then, of course, you vote for the party that you believe in. I think at this coming election, I think the vast majority of people will vote for what they believe in, and that's right and proper. All I'm saying is in some very, very marginal seats, where there, one or two votes might make all the difference between a nationalist and a unionist winning, I would not be surprised if some people choose to go for the unionist candidate who they think is most likely to be successful.
So
whether
how...
I would do the same in those circumstances, I can't say. It's something one actually would have to think very hard about.
But you clearly might.
Well, I'm simply saying that I think you have to judge what are the priorities at that particular moment. And one thing I'm certain about is that the Nationalist Party in Scotland, despite having been rejected by the Scottish people in the referendum, have not given up their basic raison d'etre, their basic objective, which is to destroy the United Kingdom. So I think that whatever individual voters might choose to do, I think Mr. Miliband, you know, there's an old saying, if you're going to sup with the devil, do choose a long, long spoon. And in this case, it should be a very long one.
Sir Malcolm, thank you very much indeed. That's Sir Malcolm Rifkin, the former cabinet minister under Sir John Major. We'll be talking more about this after five and get